Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Asian Avengers. So weak.
The Asian Avengers. So weak. So fuckable, bro. You know? Whoa. There's five Asian guys together.
Together. Did you ever go through a stealing phase?
Do I think everyone should have a gun? Maybe.
Or you can look me up. I don't care. I'll fight you. I don't care.
You want to get high as fuck? You like opium?
And welcome back to another episode of Asian Not Asian Podcast, the podcast where two Asian guys not from Asia talk about American issues no American cares about. I'm your host, Fumi Abe.
And I'm Mike Nguyen.
Today is September 26th. Hope you're doing okay. Hope you're surviving. As always, if you're listening to this on your phones right now, please take a screenshot and post it on Instagram stories. Tag us at AsianNotAsianPod. And if you're an iTunes listener, please leave a review. We also have merch. We released merch very recently. People have been posting about it on their Instagram. People are looking cute. People are looking real good. So definitely check that out at AsianNotAsianPod.com/merch. It's hilarious because people own merch. Our fans, anals, our anal fans, Asian Not Asian listener, that is, they own fans. They own merch. Mike does not own any merch. That's an issue.
I don't.
We gotta get you some merch.
I don't got any merch. I need to get some. The only merch I have is like an old sample that Gina has now turned into a kitchen rag. So we have that. That's why I have Asian Not Asian kitchen rag.
Exclusive.
Exclusive kitchen rag. It's pretty sweet. But yeah, please check it out. And it's a good time. So yeah, we love seeing it on social medias.
It is time for story of the week. Mike did some weird shit that he wants to tell everybody about.
Weird shit? I didn't do any weird shit. The way you preface it. Already, it's not good. But it was a weird... Not weird. It was actually really awesome. But it was just funny. And so I did a show. It was on Thursday. And it was cool. Like, you know, there's been shows happening in New York, and it was an outdoor show at this this dude's, like, he owns like this kind of brownstone situation. Not really brownstone, but it's in Harlem, and he had a backyard and everything like that, and it was super nice. And a lot of young comics that we know, Antriot, and among other people, were there. And it's interesting because the host is this young guy. I don't want to name him just because
he would love it if you named him. He's a fan.
Okay,
right?
His name's Wyatt. His name's Wyatt.
Wow.
Young dude, super and he was hosting, and you know, he brought up all the different community. Hey, you're going to love this next person. This person's great, Bob. You're going to love her. And then I was the headliner, so I was the last person. And this young dude, he goes up to the stage, and before he brings me up, he's like, "Man, I'm really excited to bring this next guy up. He's our headliner, but I'm really excited because, you know, I've been following his career or kind of like listening to him since I was a teenager, since I was 13 years old." And I was like, holy crap. Like, what kind of To Catch a Predator situation did I just walk into here? Because he's in college. Wyatt's in college. Right. I don't know where he goes to school, but he's in college. And, you know, we've been in this game for a little while, like 7-8-ish years or whatever.
I didn't even do that math. That all makes sense now.
Right. So that means, you know, when we started, you know, there are people who could have seen some of our stand up when they were little kids. Like he was like 13 or whatever.
Wow. Yeah,
he found my shit on Reddit. And like I used to like go on Reddit all the time, but he found my shit on Reddit, and like there's like a little comedy subgroup on Reddit, which is just like, you know, a lot of people who are beginners who are just like trying to learn how to do stand up, which is cool. And so he was like, "I'm really excited to do this. You know, he's an inspiration, blah, blah, blah," which is so weird. And so he brings me up, and the first thing I say is I you know, it's so nice for him to say that. And I did not get into this game to inspire people. Okay, that's not what I'm trying to do. Not at all. You know, I do not want to get into the game of creating my replacement. Do you know what I'm saying?
Like, this is yeah, like, that guy's funnier than you.
He's a young guy. He's funnier than me. He's hot. It's like I built the robot that will take the job that I have. I don't want to do that. Okay, but it was cool, and it's all kind of dovetails into, you know, I was away last week because I had like my birthday, and I'm like, everybody, I'm getting older, but it's interesting because like you're putting in these seeds from a long time ago, and you kind of forget about it. You know, you like lay down all these seeds, and you forget about them. And then, like, over time, you know, you go and you check back on the season, they've become a cool, like, young, hot comedian guy. And I'm just like, what happened? Like, this is so weird. You know? But we've been in it for a minute, you know?
That makes me feel so old because you're right. Like, I started... I felt like I was really young when I started. I started when I was 24, but that was like 6 years ago. So yeah, technically, exactly. Somebody could have been 14 and seen right? me and been like, I could do the same thing. This guy fucking sucks. And then
that's the funny thing too, is that whenever I feel like someone gets inspired, I feel there's two ways you can be inspired. A, you see someone amazing and you go, I want to be just like that.
Yeah.
Or you see someone who sucks, which is like me 7 years ago or even now.
Yeah, on Reddit.
And go, oh, I could do better than this guy. Fuck this guy. Dude. And so here we are.
That's the thing with comedy is, you know, in any other career, if someone's like, oh, my God, I don't know, insert name of astronaut. I saw you when I was a baby, and I've always wanted to be inspiring. A scientist. And now I go to Johns Hopkins, and I'm becoming a space engineer. Like, oh, that's amazing.
Absolutely.
But for comedians, if someone came up to me and was like, I became a comedian because of you, I'd be like, no, go back.
Hey, wait.
Go back.
Don't do this. You don't want this. You don't want any of this. So... shout outs to Wyatt. You know, he's a young comic on the scene. I'm sure we'll see him around. And then there's us as well. So here we are. I can't wait to be inspiring the next generation of comedians. And I'm still going to be doing shows when I'm 50 and they're 20 and they'll be getting Netflix specials. So
that'll
comedy, be sweet
baby.
As hell.
That's comedy.
But yeah, I'm excited. I'm actually a little nervous.
Yeah, I am too.
Today.
Have you?
I'm nervous.
I'll be honest with you. We just did that story up top, but this guest today has so much aura that I felt like I'm in like a classroom. This person is very smart. I feel like I'm in a classroom, and I'll be honest with you. I felt weird even saying fuck. You know what I'm saying? Like I felt like I had to behave, and I actually toned down my ridiculousness. Listeners, if you noticed, I toned it down the energy of this room has changed.
You did. I wore a polo shirt today and also socks and the dress shoes because you know what, this next guest deserves respect. Okay,
absolutely.
This person it inspires people in her. It, you know, also with her comedy, which
yes.
we think is a huge mistake, and we're gonna get into that. We're gonna break it down. She's got so many credits that like it actually is taking up quite a bit of space on this page.
On this note, on their outline.
named one of the funniest 50 funniest women by Huffington Post. Author of the recent release How to Make White People Laugh. She's a TED Fellow. Whenever someone's a fellow of anything, that's pretty fancy. Mm-hmm. Host of Fake the Nation, a political comedy podcast. Regular panelist on NPR's Wait, Don't Tell Me, which Fumi and I had a small writing gig. So
she may have done one of those shows. Who knows? Was she listening to the credits? Probably not.
Probably
not.
We're there. We're in two episodes. Way too many credits. It's kind of triggering. Give it up right now. So excited for Negin Farsad. Woo-hoo!
Hey!
Yay.
Oh, wait.
Oh no!
Hey,
oh, there we go!
I was muted.
Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for like putting on shirts and pants for me. I feel really honored by that.
Oh, I don't got pants on. I got shorts on. Okay, take it easy. Okay? You're not that fancy, but I do have a shirt on.
It's so funny. I'm actually like a total like a potty mouth, as they say. So it's funny to me that anyone would clean up their language for like any kind of interaction with me because there's just fucking dirt in my mouth.
Oh, yes.
I live.
You have like very comedy CEO energy, you know? And yes, I just I didn't want to get fired. That's really what I was trying to do, you know.
Yeah, you have grad school comedy energy, you know? Like you wrote a dissertation for sure, you know?
So. Yeah, well, I mean, I do have an unnecessary number of master's degrees for someone who became a comedian. that's definitely true.
We're definitely going to get into that. Have you ever had a situation like I was describing where like somebody comes up to you and it's like, oh, you inspired me to do this thing? And because like it's happened to me only like once or twice. And each time I'm like, me? Like, you do not want to be me. You know, I always feel like that. I don't know. Does everything like that ever happen to you? You know?
Yeah, you know, it definitely has happened. And I find it really disconcerting because yes. I still think of myself as just like a kid in comedy.
Okay.
And I don't know when that feeling goes away. Okay. Because I'm obviously not a kid in comedy, right? I've been doing this for a fucking minute. And but I still don't feel... Like it does. I don't feel like I'm at the status where someone should come up to me and be like, I've been following you and I want to grow up and be you. Wow. And all that shit like just does not seem right to me at all. And I find it, you know, and of course, my first horrible thought is this is exactly as you said, this person's going to eclipse me. I'm done. Like this random person
yes.
in Wyoming who I'm seeing at a show like is going to eclipse me. And that's, I mean, first of all, that's such a gross thought. And it's yeah. also so normal. I mean, I think we're just normal people, you know,
yes.
that have horrible, narcissistic, disgusting thoughts.
Okay, good. Yes, okay, good.
And then I immediately have to go into mantras that are like, a rising tide raises all boats. And you know what I mean? Like, we can all win. There's no zero sum theory to comedy. You know what I mean? And so then I go into all of those mantras.
You know what?
To try and
you know what
a
it is, though?
Person.
When you meet a young person at a show who's like, oh, I want to be you. Like, I started comedy because of you. I think you get threatened because, especially for us, like, you know, people of color doing comedy. I feel that, especially again, like when you started. I started in 2014. I'm assuming you started before that, but I'm sure there were just a lot more sort of barriers. Not even to get booked, but just like the acceptance of the stuff that you want to talk about. But you kind of see the young like Asian comics today. They are so fucking confident, Mike. They're just up there talking about.
Yeah.
Kimchi or whatever
yeah.
the fuck that
they're
I don't have
about
the
K-pop.
Yeah,
yeah,
like
about,
stuff that
like,
I was too embarrassed
are,
to.
Yeah.
You know, when I started, I was like, well, they're not going to understand this. So let me just like water it down a little bit, you know, but like they don't do that.
Right.
And you feel that energy, even though they're 1 year into comedy. And I feel that it's only natural for you to be like, what is all this confidence? Like, what are you doing right now? You know,
completely. I mean, there's a lot of I feel like when I started, which was, I guess we'll call it 2006-ish, 2007-ish is when I sort of officially was doing stand-up. I started, there was a lot of exposition, you know what I mean?
Yes, like, yes, yes, yes.
I felt like I couldn't walk onto a stage without clarifying, like, all right, I know you're looking at an ethnic lady, and I know that's very confusing for everybody just off the bat. Like, I know I should be here as a customer or maybe on the wait staff, but like I shouldn't, you know, to be on the stage is already very confusing for you as a woman, and then never mind a brown woman. So I felt like I had to spend the first 5 minutes of every set just being like, I know that you know that I am an ethnic person. And I know you're wondering what kind of ethnic. I know you didn't understand my name when the host said it. We
yeah.
all know that the host probably mispronounced my
yes.
name. You
yeah.
know,
yeah.
I had to go through all of these things. And nowadays, the kids these days, you see
yes.
them coming on stage with that confidence
yeah.
of like they don't need to explain themselves.
Yeah.
And I am deeply jealous of
oh,
that.
Oh, yes.
You know,
jealousy.
Because I didn't
this
have
is what
that.
This is about. 100%. I do want to talk a little bit about your background. Just, you know, let's get our listeners to know you a little bit better. So, your background is you're Iranian. Your family background is Iranian, and then you were born in Connecticut, but you were raised in California in Palm Springs, right?
California. That's right.
That's right. Yes, I'm from.
Someone read the extended cut of my bio.
And by someone, I mean our assistant producer, because I don't got the time. No. I mean, like, I'm from Southern California, and I know I'm from Orange County.
What part?
I'm from Orange County, from Anaheim, and I grew up there in the 90s, and I knew there was a big. At the time, we called Iranian people Persians, and they called themselves that sometimes too. And I know over time they've kind of, you know, there's a correction in there, which is great. So, but like, you know, did you grow up in a very tight knit community in Palm Springs? I mean, like, the only thing that a lot of people know about Palm Springs now is that there's a movie with Andy Samberg based, you know, in Palm Springs.
It's an infinite time loop. That's all I know about Palm Springs.
I mean, you know, Palm Springs is a really weird town to grow up because essentially I'm a townie. It's a resort town. Like, that's what people know about it. And I think, and I haven't seen Palm Springs yet, which is really shameful, and it's on my list, but I have a toddler, so I have a great excuse for not seeing most things. I think it's held there because there's a wedding there. We became a destination wedding town.
Yes.
In the last 10 years or whatever. Before that, we were just your plain old golf resort town while I was growing up. And it still is I think one of the top five sort of gay cities in America. But I am 100% a townie because I grew up in this resort town, but I wasn't there for the golf and actually never played golf. And there was there was one other Iranian kid when I was growing up. So there was no very, very few Iranians. There was no tight-knit community of Muslims. There was nothing like that. So I was sort of on my own, you know, just sort of meandering golf courses.
Then you talked about how you have a lot of master's degrees. I'm only aware of the one. Do you have more than one? Or do you just
I have a master's degree in public policy and then another one in African American studies. I did them simultaneously at Columbia, but I did get two technically.
Well, you know what? Every immigrant loves a deal. Okay, so two for one. That's fantastic.
Yeah, we were looking at we had our assistant producer do research on you, and we're Mike and I are reviewing this, and it was this resume is amazing. Look at this resume, your educational background, it looked like you were on your way to become president. You know, and then I don't know what happened. I don't know. Then you ended up here with us. So I don't know.
Yeah. I know why. That's the question on all of our minds. What happened?
What happened?
No, I mean, and it's true. And I don't know if you guys were I was a total nerd. I was an academic nerd growing up. And I'm still, in some senses, an accolade whore. I just want
yes.
That's the best kind of whore.
Degrees. Yes. I want, you know. Yeah.
Yes.
Fewer STDs. I was always about achievement and getting good grades and and just trying to be a perfect student. And so that's kind of what I did when I was, a student and growing up in Southern California, I was always Southern California is the armpit of America. Now as a comedian, I've traveled to actual armpits. But parts of Southern California really are the armpit of America.
That's totally right.
And I was just if you want to ever have any kind of intellectual growth, you have to move to the Northeast. These are the shit that a disaffected 16-year-old says, you know what I mean? Yeah. Who's reading Jean-Paul Sartre on the side, in the original French, a fucking real dick. That's
who I was. While you're driving around in your golf cart in Palm Springs. Yeah, I get it. Yep, got you.
Exactly. TPing this, science teacher's house or whatever, but also, but really being really high-minded about it.
Right.
So I ended up going to Cornell for undergrad, and then I just sort of left California and then never went back.
Yeah, it says here you have one of your master's degrees is in African American studies, but you have another one in race relations. And I find that that sounds tight, but I was just thinking when I first read this, I mean, your parents, I assume, are immigrants. I'm sure we all sort of experience the same pressures and stuff growing up. And I, You know, yep. I remember, like, you know, I wanted to study music for a long time and end up doing that. And I just remember that conversation, right? When you want to pursue the arts, they're already like, there's no money in the arts. But, like, I don't even know. I don't know how I would explain this major to my parents. They'd be like, is there money in studying white people?
They,
like,
they, you know, they'd probably be like, why don't you study music instead? Okay.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah. Here's a flute.
You could be a busboy at a jazz club, you know? Why not?
No, totally. Well, it's funny. I mean, I, you know, they knew that I wasn't, you know, doing in an undergrad. I studied government and theater. Like, I did a double major or whatever. So, like, they knew that I was already, like, you know, into that the theater thing was supposed to, like, was like my side piece.
Oh, okay.
And that,
oh, you're naughty,
and that,
girl.
Like, politics.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Disgusting.
And I just talked about it like it was just more, I'm just doing government, you know. And in that time, I interned for Hillary Clinton.
Oh, okay.
I interned for Charlie Rangel. Wow. I interned for, wait for it, this is the most impressive one, C-SPAN.
Whoa. Now that's a credit.
So I mean, right? Yeah. How many people can say? It was actually a really exciting internship.
Okay,
it doesn't matter.
Cool.
I got drunk a lot, not on the job, but very across the street from the job.
That's funny.
But yeah, I mean, so I was still really, like, driven, and I didn't really explain to them, like, look, I'm getting this degree in African American studies so that I can understand movement building and struggle. Mm. And, like, and I couldn't, because, you know, my parents didn't even know that they weren't white. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I didn't even have that conversation with them until I met, like, basically moved in with a black man.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then, you know, yeah. So, I mean, my parents are like the picture of American evolution, like,
yes,
going from, you know, going from, like, why are you dating black people to, like, Black Lives Matter, you know, what I mean? These, like, woke immigrants. And, you know, but I was always interested in the struggle of, like, minority communities in the United States, and I was a part of one. It just wasn't like a mainstream kind of, well, you know, defined community the way you know, the Mexican American community is, where I grew up. Like, that's who I was surrounded by, and then of course the African American community that has such a long history of struggle and oppression and triumph and struggle again and more struggle.
Right.
And, you know, and so I thought, you know, if I wanted to go into politics and I wanted to be serious about it, then I really needed to understand that kind of movement building. And so that's why I ended up doing that degree. But of course, it, you know, again, it doesn't matter because,
right,
I'm a comedian.
Right.
Now.
So
yeah.
When did it fall apart?
At what point did you decide to throw away all of your ideals and pursue this instead?
and write dick jokes.
Yes,
at
exactly.
MTV,
yeah,
for,
yeah, exactly.
My first
with, yeah, with your filthy potty mouth.
I am no, you know, I was doing comedy the whole time.
Okay.
So I was doing it in college. I was doing it in grad school. In grad school, I was around the most serious people,
yes,
right? These are, like, the entire government of Japan would export their people to Colombia to get this degree. And I would, you know, like, that's how serious the people, like, it was,
yes,
like, international serious people.
Yeah, yes.
And then they would be like, okay, let's form our study group or whatever. And I'd be like, that's cute, but I have to go do a set downtown.
Yeah.
So I'll see you guys later. Like, I clearly had one foot out the door the entire time. And then I ended up getting a job as a policy advisor for the campaign finance board for New York City, which is a fantastic city agency and whose work I really believe in. And in general, just, like, campaign finance is an issue that I've always really been you know, into. And in New York City, like, you can be poor and still run for office because of that program.
That's cool.
So it's really remarkable. But, you know, at the end of the day, I wasn't happy.
Mm. So, there's that word,
H word.
Yeah. I was doing comedy the whole time, and my friends actually staged an intervention.
No way.
Yeah, they were just like, you know, you're a comedian, snap out of it, you know. And then I sort of had to accept my lot in life.
Oh, you had such nice friends.
Yeah, like that they were, you know, that they were like, it's clear that you're kind of, because my sort of hobby of comedy was turning out to be this like 40 hour a week hobby.
It was
taking over. You know, I would go present numbers in front of city council as a part of my job, and then I would go on stage at night and do jokes about city council. Like, it got deeply inappropriate at a certain point.
Maybe it was an intervention, in the sense that you know, you're ruining also our lives, so you need to get away and just
be zombie, you know what I'm saying? Come on now,
accept it.
So you got this academic background, you got this like political professional background, and it all makes sense because, you know, we were like, checking out your website and stuff, and you sort of, one of the way you brand yourself is that you are a social justice comedian. Is that mm-hmm. still true today? Right. And we just wanted to ask, like, you know, why that? Why not a regular comedian who's also into activism? Is there like a reason why you want to call yourself that way?
You know, I am essentially just a regular comedian who's also into activism.
Okay, fair.
But at some point, you know, people like to like label you.
Of course,
and so they kept labeling me as a political comic, which I thought was interesting. And I don't know if this has ever happened to you guys, but like, I would do jokes about my mom or something.
Yes, yes, yes.
And then people would come off, you know, and again, she's, you know, this Iranian Muslim woman. And I would come off stage and be like, oh, you're so brave. And like, you know, it's really interesting political material. And I was like, I mean, I was talking about like me telling my mom about STDs.
Yeah.
I'm not
right.
sure yep. how that's yep. the woman in the story is Muslim, but like, is that exactly political material? And so, and then I realized that kind of what I was, you know, I wasn't doing jokes about like Mitch McConnell's double chins. I was doing jokes about things that were sort of, I think, more fundamental. And because social justice isn't partisan, it's just there's a correct thing and there's an incorrect thing, you know. So that's kind of where I started doing that, and also because I did do a lot of activism with my comedy, you know, and that's, so it kind of made sense for me to kind of embrace that label. And it was, this was forever ago, before even, you know, before people started to use the term social justice in an annoying way, know. Nowadays I'm like, you can call me whatever, like, because I don't want the term social justice to trigger anyone, even though it's still a fundamentally good thing, you know.
I feel that I definitely identify with what you just said, as far as like kind of being funneled into certain things and the way that people sort of see your comedy. Like, I don't know if people necessarily think of me as like an Asian comedian, but I was looking at my set like the other day, and I have a lot of pornography jokes, way too many. But then nobody comes off the stage and goes, man, you inspired me with your porno jokes. You know, it's like people kind of see, and I do have a lot of Asian jokes for sure, but like, people, I think they take what they want out of your set, and they kind of see who you are, and they kind of try to figure you out. And then, you know, you yourself, there's like a weird interplay, because you feel like, okay, I do get traction out of certain kinds of jokes, and you end up sort of like identifying yourself that way. But then you're afraid of like being pigeonholed into something, you know? So I definitely feel what you're saying there, you know? I mean, Fumi, go ahead.
I was gonna say, you know, I did a show in London once, and I remember, you know, have you guys done the UK, like shows in the UK?
I've only done open mics there.
No, we're failures.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. we're gonna edit that out.
Like, how that is the way children of immigrants define themselves, that they're just failures. Yes, like,
absolutely right.
You just start that out the gate. You're like, I already failed. But I was in the UK, and in the UK they review like stand-up comedy in a way that we don't.
Oh,
hear.
We heard about this.
Ronnie Chang told us about this.
It's insane. I was like, I just did some like random shows. I wasn't even like really, it wasn't even just me. It would be like me and two other people or something like that. And they would review that show.
Okay.
And I realized like one of the things that was happening in the UK is that they were like, oh, she was funny, but when she talked about being Iranian American, that's when things really got interesting. Because I think it's like people wanna Because they just do. They want to classify
yeah.
you.
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean? So it doesn't matter how many jokes about pornography you do. Like, if you're a reviewer in the UK, they're really going to hone in on that one thing. And it's, I don't know. It's like, at first I thought that was really frustrating. And now I'm like, well, it is my entire being.
Yeah. You know? So yeah, you're right. Yeah, yeah. It is literally in my DNA.
It does inform everything in every way I see the world. So I guess it's okay. Yeah.
I mean, just to tie it back yeah. to the example that we were talking about earlier about young minority comedians talking about whatever the fuck they want to talk about, being confident. Mm. You know, I think for us, it's like, for Asian people, it's weird because when I first started, like, we weren't like allowed to do Asian jokes. Like, you could, but it was like a bad thing, right? So bookers would be like, hey man, you're talking too much about race, right?
Right.
So I learned that it was a bad thing. And now
yes.
it's like, now it's different when somebody's like, oh, he's an Asian comic. I feel it has a different connotation than it did in 2014,
yes.
you know? So yes. I think it's like a whole mind fuck for someone like us, because now it's like a good word and before it was a bad word, and I'm just like kind of conflicted.
Do you feel more free now? What do you
feel? Yeah, I mean,
feel,
you know,
like you can say whatever?
I've been doing it for like 6-7 years, so I don't care. You know, I used to be like, I'm just a comedian who does Asian jokes. I don't give a shit. It called me an Asian comic. I called me a perverted comic. I don't care. You know, I'm just, I'm just me. But like, I can confidently say that, and I legit do not care what people think or to say. But like before, you care so much about what other people think because you need validation because you're not like established yet, right? So like all those little opinions about like, hey, don't talk about being Muslim, like that scares white people, you know, or like white people don't think it's funny. They don't say that, but that's what they mean. That's the subtext.
Yeah.
Club owners especially, yeah. they're like, hey, you're talking a little bit too much. You're saying white people too much. No, shut the fuck up, right? So it's like, it's all that subtext, and
you know,
you kind of grew up with that.
And there, I came up when there was such a huge distinction between clubs and alt rooms.
Yes, yes.
And there were like alt comics and club comics, and they didn't mix very much. And that's definitely changed,
yes,
I
yes.
think, in the last, I don't know, 5 or 6
yeah,
years.
I would agree.
Where,
yeah.
right? And
yeah.
I think part of that is because it's okay to be ethnic.
Like, yeah, 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 okay. yeah, yeah. It's okay.
It's cool.
And so bookers are like, wait a second, who are all of these brown people we were like neglecting for so
yeah.
long? Like, you know, it's like, we've been here the whole time. And it's nice. It's also, you know, because I love doing clubs. And I used to think, no, I'm an alt comic and I don't, you know, that's not my scene or whatever. And so I've really come around to it. So it's interesting to see comedy change and like grow into the Grey's Anatomy episode
yeah.
that it yearns to be.
Back in our day, like, I also consider myself like an alt comic, but it's only because I wasn't like a straight white guy, you know? I think content-wise, like,
yes.
I'm pretty, I don't know about anymore, but like, I do have like clubby jokes about like, yeah, my girlfriend,
oh, yeah.
you know,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
but,
yeah,
but it like doesn't matter because I look like this. It's like, oh, that's indie. His Asian face is so indie.
Look at that.
Like,
you know? So alt. What
it's
an
so
alt
Brooklyn.
Face you have. Yeah. So different. Yeah.
No, exactly. That's so fascinating. And I think it was also a way for us not to, you know, say the real part out loud of what was happening, which was that the clubs were so very white.
Yeah.
And if they weren't like so very white, there were black comics at clubs. But there weren't even like Latino comics at clubs.
Right,
you know
right.
what
yeah,
I mean?
That's
it was
true.
It was like the scene was just like there's these well, you know, there's a well-defined space for white comedians, obviously, and they're going to be the vast majority of the comedians. And then there's this, you know, there's a well-defined lane for certain black comedians, and then everyone else,
yes.
like, you know, if you're a woman, like, you're not really going to do that. You know,
yeah.
And there's still, like, I did a gig pretty recently in Kansas City, and I you know, I won't besmirch the, well, no, I guess I will besmirch.
besmirch!
Yeah, besmirch, bitch!
Besmirch, baby!
Oh, thy name is besmirch. Yeah, Shakespeare, burn. That's two master's degrees, this.
No, this is, like, the... the lightest besmirchment that wouldn't even make like a Reddit, like, you know, third level down fucking sub bullet. But I just happened to look at to see, it was at the Improv, and I noticed, oh, there hadn't been a woman listed on their website on a lineup for like 2 weeks.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, so I mean, that's it's kind of still what the world we're living in. I mean, it's obviously getting better. We all feel that it's changing, you know, but it's still it's the change doesn't come uniformly around this big, very big, vast country. And, you know, and so it's still weird sometimes.
So it's interesting you bring that up, because I did want to talk about like social justice comedy. I know you don't really say that, you're just a comedian who's just trying to do, you know, do some activism also, but I do feel that, like, you know, we saw some talks and stuff that you did in 2016 with talking about social justice, and I feel that social justice meant a certain thing 4 years ago before Trump was elected, and now it means something a little different. You know, what's your sort of take on that? Because I feel like I don't even know how to like really unpack it. I don't know if it's like too polarizing, or it's become like kind of a misnomer, or whatever. But like, do you feel the brand of social justice and the way that social justice comedy is has really shifted? And how are you kind of working through that, you know?
Well, I mean, it's funny because I think when I started to use that term, it was just, you know, and this was like 2000, I don't know, 12 or 13 or something. It was because, like I said, I didn't want to be called a political comic.
Right.
And it just felt, and it was weird, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it was like a weird term. And people were like, oh, that's weird. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, and I had... you know, my second feature film that I made was called The Muslims Are Coming, and I rounded up a bunch of Muslim American comedians and I took them on the road and we did these shows, and then we got people like the whole idea was like to, you know, to kind of dispel Islamophobia, right?
Yep.
And we went to places like Mississippi and Alabama and, you know, Florida and Utah and places where they love the Muzzies, and and we did these shows, right? And then along the way, we interviewed, you know, we also have people like John Stewart and Lewis Black and David Cross, whatever, like, you know, waxing poetic about Islamophobia and how hilarious it is. and so anyways, in that show, really, that movie really felt like the kind of epitome of like a social justice comedy film. And that tour felt that way. And then I think kind of what has happened since, to answer your question about like what seems to have changed, is that this notion of like social justice warriors and like people who sit online and like just yell and like just only all they do is call people out in like an irritating fashion. They have no sense of nuance, and they have no like forgiveness, and they have no,
right,
and all they are is just pure internet rage personified.
Yes. Yes.
I think those people have sort of like ruined aspects of that. The kind of these kind of like laptop social justice warriors. And that makes me sad, because you know, so the term social justice in itself is a pure and fundamental thing, you know, that we should all believe in.
Glad you said that, because I'm a victim of this too, but like when I hear somebody identify as a social justice warrior, or sorry, social justice comedian in 2020, I just automatically assume that you might be one of those people that you just described, like on Twitter, like kind of trying to cancel everybody and all that, when you know, you're like an OG social justice comedian. You've got the degrees. Like, you're educated.
You got the degrees.
You're actually more interested in, like, change. And you mentioned the word forgiveness, which is, like, not a word you would expect from social justice warriors today. But, like, why not? You know? Like, that's the whole point.
Why not?
Right?
Yeah.
And that's great.
I really don't understand it. It's, you know, it would be, you know, un-Muslim of me or un-Christian of most people to, like, not have that in their arsenal, you know?
Yeah.
Forgiveness is a really, really critical tool. And it's a critical tool in movement building because, you guys, like, if we want to recognize racial injustices, we're also going to have to be able to, like, come to some sort of truth and reconciliation about it. And reconciliation involves some measure of forgiveness. You know what I mean? Yeah. It involves saying, like, these institutions, these, you know, police brutality has existed, and we're gonna have to be able to move on from it into the utopia that we want to build. And that just doesn't happen if you fucking, like, if you're rageful forever. Like, that's not how you get to utopia, you know?
Yeah, but you got to admit, rage, that gets the retweets, okay? And that's what this is all about. Remember that. Okay, so, yeah. You know, you have a really interesting TED Talk about haters and the kind of like the taxonomy of haters, as you said. It was super funny. And it's, you know, I think, you know, and again, you did that in 2016. And
you guys both have TED Talks, right? It's just something.
Oh, yeah, you know.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, you know, my degree is still coming in the mail. It'll be here soon. So, you know, the thing I wanted to ask you about is, like, do you still feel that, like, that there's that taxonomy still works? Because I feel in some ways, like, haters have become, there used to be haters online and it was like, oh, there's just some trolls. But now the trolls seem to have some control, some levers of power. They're getting a lot better at, like, making YouTube videos. It's like it feels a little different. So I want to know if, like, do you feel like there's still haters like that? And do you feel that, like, we can convert some haters still into people who are not haters anymore, you know?
Right. I mean, I think, you know, something that's happened, and it's funny because, like, yeah, that TED Talk came out during an election year, it wasn't after the election,
yes,
right?
Yes,
it
yes,
was
yes,
like
yes.
right before yeah, the yeah, election yeah, yeah. that came out. And I don't even really remember my categorizations, but I do think in terms of, like, what the landscape is of haters, I think people are still, like, you know, the ones who are, like, gonna say something to your face are still few and far between. I think the thing that, you know, I've always asked my agents, like, please focus on booking me in red states, you know? And so I perform a lot in, like, you know, places like South Carolina and South Dakota and, you know, like Kansas and Missouri, and I love performing in those places because the face-to-face interaction with people is just the number one thing that will save us all. And I think the internet is the one thing that will ruin us.
Yes.
You're absolutely right about that. I mean, I know that, like, we put some clips on YouTube and people will, like, you know, if it's like a sensitive topic, somebody will, like, write some mean thing on it. And the second I respond, I'll be like, hey, man, like, I just chopped this up because your attention span is 45 seconds. The whole episode is up on this website. And they'll be like, thanks, man. Like, you know, immediately they
change their tune. Right. Yeah, because they're suddenly encountering a human being. I mean, turns out they were encountering a human being in the whole time.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't. It's like you need to constantly be reminded on the internet. It's like, it's so strange to me. I've gotten death threats. I've gotten hate mail. I've gotten all that stuff. It comes with the territory.
Jeez.
And I think when it comes with the territory of being like, I'm a woman who talks out loud,
right? Yes.
Also,
yeah
you know, I'm Muslim and all that shit. Like, it invites a certain je ne sais quoi in some of the people that like to do death threats. But I think
so
what's
crazy.
Interesting is
people who like to do death
like
threats,
I feel like I wonder, you know, if I would get the same kind of thing if it wasn't for the internet.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I think I've gotten sometimes people writing, like, an angry letter to a theater about why did the theater it bring me to their city or something.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, I'm thinking specifically this case in Georgia where they were, like, trying to figure out if they should have extra security because they had gotten some letters. But it's interesting. I think a handwritten letter feels very cute. Like, it's yeah. a point. Like, oh, if that's how you're going to do your death threat, yeah. I'll take them. You
yeah,
know
like
I mean?
Like he sat down at his desk and was like, you know, just like, how can I make this a beautiful metaphor? And, you know?
Yeah, you know, there was like penmanship involved. But it's so much easier now to just yes. to kind of type up your little hateful message, to the point where, you know, it like your message about hate is coming in the same time as like someone being like, I'm such a huge fan, you know. And so it's very confusing because all of these things come together,
right?
And in one space, so I it sort of leaves the average person with like not enough bandwidth to emotionally process all of this, you know, these messages, these conflicting messages.
Yeah, I mean, those that's like the death. I can't get over this death threat thing because like you're just kind of like smiling about it, but because it's like yeah. it's like become part of your life. I mean, I just realize what a weak person I am because
oh my god,
Mike and I get really sad when someone's like, you're not funny. And we're like, no, but like you're like people are like, you're not funny yeah. and die like that. Yeah. Like, I don't even know what I would do if somebody asked me to kill myself. You know, like it's
yeah,
right. Well, I yeah, I mean, I got the scariest one kind of came to my parents.
Oh shit!
And that was like legitimately scary because it was like a voicemail as well. But I think, I don't know. I just honestly think if I got a chance to meet that person, yeah. and if we could just like get a coffee, that they probably wouldn't wish my death.
Right. Yes. Right.
You
yes.
know what I mean? Yeah. I really believe that. And it's going to take me my entire life to meet everyone in America, but like that's the plan.
Yo, didn't Anne Frank say something like that in her diary?
I feel that is like the most hilarious premise for a rom-com I've ever heard. You know, it's just like she had given up on love, but love hadn't given up on her, and he wanted her dead. This Christmas, it's death
threat. I already set up 5 meetings for us to pitch that.
This
so,
is happening.
We're ready. Also, I love that you're like, didn't Anne Frank say that? And it's every comedian's dream to be likened to Anne Frank. So thank you.
You remind
thank
me
of that as
I,
well.
I swear she says Frank. Something like, if people are still good, like Nazis are chill. I don't know if she said Nazis are chill, but she
Nazis
says something about, she says something like all
she's
people
like,
are
she's like, if
good.
I could have a coffee yes. with a Nazi, I bet they wouldn't want to kill me.
Just have a, you know, have a nice strudel with some SS officer, yeah. you know, hey, he's not such a bad guy, you know? So we're here with our hilarious guest, Nagin Farsad of NPR and of a million things. And we have everyone's favorite segment. It's called Das Race News. And we got one here, and I'm excited. This it doesn't sound funny, and it's not funny. Well, I don't know. Well, I'm interested to learn more about this because I have been purposely not reading about. I've been purposely reading less news. I don't know if you guys have been doing that. I've been reading less news.
Yes.
And or like I'll give myself a timer of like, okay, you got 10 seconds to just cram in as much poison into your mind as you can, and then you got to shut it off. So this one, of course, is a big one. You know, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg has you know, honestly, she needed a break. Okay, she's been holding it down for forever. Mm-hmm, she weighed only like 80 pounds, but she was like benching 450. And for sure,
of justice.
Are you kidding me? She's just like she put the belt on and was just like just bah, pa-pa, you know. So. And you know that now everything's kind of shifting. I think people forget sometimes there's like an election going to that's happening as well. I wanted to talk to our guest because she is actually smart, TED fellow. Two. I don't even know how many masters. We've mentioned like at least 3 or 4 now.
17 masters.
17 master's degrees. Okay, including one from University of Phoenix. Why not? And what is this sort of?
I wanted to test their online program.
And so you know, I wanted to get her take on this. I mean, and recently, I think they sort of. It's funny. They leaked who the next justice, the nominee, is going to be. What a terrible leak, by the way. I mean, the worst kind of leak, man. I'm usually looking for leaked nudes. This is not the leaked nude I was hoping for. So what is sort of your take on this? And maybe you can kind of put it into context for like, you know, our listeners out there, you know?
Right. I mean, I think so. Like, one thing is, you know, her passing is really sad, but it should totally be celebrated. She lived a long life. She had the most impact of, like, you know, top five impacts of any woman in the United States, right? And so, wow, what a fucking incredible life, and what a time to celebrate that life. Like, that's, you know, fantastic. And I think we get so mired in the political discussion, we forget, you know, if you have a credit card in your name and you're a woman, if you've ever leased an apartment in your name and you're a woman, if you've ever been on a sports team and you're a woman in your college, like, these things are because of the work of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. So we're fucking lucky to have had her. And what a wonderful life to celebrate. And then I think, you know, yes. So then that leaves the court with you know, and it looks like Trump and McConnell are going to just push through and put a nominee up for a vote. And, you know, and it looks like they have the vote. So if they wanted to have a 6-3 conservative leaning court, they can totally do that. It's really sad because really the Senate, who's in charge of confirmations, you know, the Senate Democrats represent 15 million more people than Senate Republicans, and yet Senate Democrats are in the minority, right? This is the fucked up thing about the Senate. It's the fucked up thing about the Electoral College. It's the fucked up anti-democratic thing that was baked into the Constitution. Yep. So anyway, it's really unfortunate. And then, so we may in fact have a 6-3 conservative majority for the court. I don't know what that means, right, for women's reproductive rights. I don't know what that means. Forget reproductive rights. Also, like, if you have Obamacare, well, I don't know if you're going to be able to keep it, right? Because they're hearing that case right after the elections. So it could be really staggering. Like, a democratically elected president could come in and pack the courts. And I actually think packing the courts, adding additional justices to the Supreme Court, is not a big deal. So I would be okay with, I mean, I, you know, because there's nothing in the Constitution that says, you know, that it has to be 9. Like, it could be 33. I don't give a shit. Let's make it less.
Yeah.
Like, let's make it less of a big deal. Like, if one person dies, we shouldn't all go into a fucking frenzy, right?
Yeah,
Buttigieg said this a lot during the primaries. He's like, we are way over frenzied about this Supreme Court. It shouldn't be such a volatile institution. Let's just get some more fucking people on there, you know, calm it down. And I'm into that. It's not a big deal. We talk about it like it's so ominous, but, you know, it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I never thought of it like that, but it's like people often talk about, like, oh, the system's broken. Well, that's like a fantastic example of, like, the fact that one person dies, and, you know, I was supposed to hang out with a friend that night when she passed away, and she's like, I don't think I can come out, you know? Like, the fact that happened is already a sign that, like, it shouldn't be, like, obviously, the fact that
it shouldn't be like that. I mean, obviously, we want to celebrate a legend and blah, 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 and I understand that, but that's not why your friend didn't come out, you know what I mean?
Your friend
didn't come out because now they're in a state of fucking panic.
Yes,
right, yes.
And it shouldn't, you know, the Supreme Court shouldn't, like, create this kind of panic.
I am so dumb. I didn't even realize that, like, because you were just mentioning how if you're a woman and you can have a credit card, that's the work of RGB. I mean, like, it sounds like before, you know, that what not long ago that we basically had a society that which was like the handmaiden. Have you guys seen that? You know,
where yeah.
Women can't own property and shit like that. I had no idea that's like, and it's crazy that's like where we started from. Do you know what I'm saying?
It wasn't that long ago.
Yeah.
Women.
RBG's lifetime.
That's crazy.
In RBG's lifetime, that's how shit was. You're absolutely right. It was the Handmaid's Tale, but with better outfits.
Well, I mean, you know, if it sounds like the Republicans, you know, get their way, hey, we're all going to have to be getting new outfits soon because I don't know what's going to happen. You know, Najin, have you started looking at white caps that you can wear fitted yourself?
What are those called?
Yeah, I don't even, whatever, long red robes or whatever. I don't know.
I think a lot of this has to do with just framing and like how we talk about stuff. Yeah. Like, I think it's great that you're only giving yourself these little small bursts of news, because right now I think every major publication in America and worldwide is they're after clicks. They're not after necessarily to inform you. And so clicks means to scare you, you know? It's a besmirchment.
Oh my gosh.
as opposed to just like, here's the news. And I think the way everything's being communicated right now is just like, it is the end of the world. I mean, or just even the way we're talking about like the postal service. Oh. The postal service is still set up to handle our mail. Like, don't worry. You can still do, you can do your absentee voting. But for us to write all of these think pieces about how like democracy's falling apart because of the U.S. Postal Service, it's just not true. And there are also legal guardrails in place. There are plenty of legal guardrails in place to help us in the event that something does go wrong, right, with an election. And so I think we need to all like calm down for a second, because some of this stuff is disinformation. And they said, Steve Bannon said very clearly in the very beginning that his whole method of operation was chaos.
Yo.
Because chaos was a bigger threat to democracy than actually threatening actual things in democracy.
Oh, shit.
And so don't be taken in by the chaos. Like, don't read all these headlines and then just go into a stupor of sadness. That's not, these headlines are designed to make you feel chaotic and like you've lost control, and you have not.
You know, I mean, people... hey, we're young comics in Brooklyn, and young comics are always talking about chaotic energy. Let's bring that down, okay? Let's chaotic energy.
Yes.
I would love Nagina, if have you ever thought about having just kind of like some service where you just like have a little affirmation that gets pushed to my cell phone and goes, hey, it's going to be okay, because I need this.
Can I just say, Season of Merch, I heard you guys talk about merch at the top of the show. We in my podcast, because I sort of started feeling that everyone is losing their minds.
Yes.
I started feeling this way a few months ago with the elections and the pandemic and da, 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 da. And then there's so many things, and I fucking totally, totally get it. But I was just like, oh, the counterpoint is optimism. And I'm not going to like sit by and back and think that like everything about this democracy is doomed and that my life is going to suck. Mm-hmm. I have a baby. That's not, I got to make sure everything is fucking awesome for her.
Yes.
You know? And so, I started saying like, okay, well, we're only doing optimism. And so at the end of every news story or whatever on Fake the Nation, you know, I would be like, well, here's the optimistic spin on that. And it's not even an optimistic spin. It's just like, why are we looking at everything with such a doomsday horrible? And so we had T-shirts made that are now available that say on the front, we're only doing optimism.
Oh, that's so great.
And so if you or anyone you know is a curmudgeon and needs that T-shirt, it is available.
I think that's a great way to end this segment. We should go around and say one optimistic thing about RPG's death. Okay, I will start. This is what I was thinking. Okay, I was listening to Nagin talk, and you had just said something. You know, you were sort of criticizing the chaotic media on both sides, and like Twitter culture and all that. And going back to what you were saying about like, yo, human to human interaction is the only way we can change people's minds. I'm gonna be honest with you. When I was doing research on you, I was like, this woman is going to cancel me because I have a ridiculous mouth and I'm loud and I'm dumb, and this is the end of her podcast. But meeting you, you're so grounded, you're so educated, and you're very fair, and I would not have gotten that vibe from you based on like your Apple iTunes reviews where people are like, this libtard, blah, 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 you know, whatever, like, you know? So I'm just saying...
That's the thing.
I'm just saying it's nice to just talk to people in real life, and then you'll realize that not everybody is as polarized as the internet makes it out to be.
Yes, I love that.
See?
No, exactly, because human-to-human interaction is the thing that will win.
Yes, yes.
So, all we need to do is get every single American on this podcast.
Yes!
And it's going to be awesome. Okay, and that was another episode of the Asian Not Asian podcast. I want to again thanks to our guest Nagin Farsad. Nagin, where can our fans find you? You got like a million things going on, but where can they find you?
I would love it if they found me on the podcast at Fake the Nation. It's a podcast on Earwolf, and you can find me on Twitter at Nagin Farsad, a name that is both easy to spell and pronounce. and you can find me on Instagram and all that shit. You can pick up a copy of my last book, How to Make White People Laugh. But yeah, the podcast right now is we're saving democracy one podcast at a time. So come join us. It's fun.
I checked it out this week. She has legit guests. Everybody, she had Margaret Cho on earlier this month.
That was like, sweet.
Talking legit guests, so definitely check it out. If you know, after you listen to Asian Not Asian, you probably feel a little dumb. So why don't you go over to Fake the Nation and bring it back.
Have some veggies along with your chocolate shake.
So
yeah, man.
I'm working on my 38th master's degree right now. So please come and see how smart we are.
And as always, you can find us on the social media. We're on there at Asian Not Asian Pod. I am also on there at The Fumi Abe. That's THEFUMIABE on all platforms.
And you can find me on Instagram at Nice Pants Bro.
Please check out our Zoom stand-up comedy show. Nagin, we'd love to have you sometimes if you're doing Zoom shows. I don't know if that's your thing or not.
We'd love it. Yeah, all right. Absolutely.
It's every other Friday, so the next one will be October 9th.
October 9th.
But Nagin, we'll send you a separate email about that. But listeners, anals, check us out October 9th. Just go to asian.asianpod.com for tickets. Patreon, if you like this podcast, you want to support, go to our patrons, patreon.com/asian.asianpod. If you donate, you become part of our community. We'll give you a shout out on the podcast. We'll slide into your DMs. And you get access to bonus episodes. So come check out all that we have to offer.
And don't forget, again, we have merch. We will probably be making some bootleg versions of We're Doing Optimism shirts because, hey, that's what we do here at this podcast. All right, we take other people's ideas and we build on top of it. Thank you very much, Nagin.
It's the American way.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks very much to everybody. Stay safe, stay optimistic.
We'll see you guys next week. Bye.
Thanks, guys.
And we are going to do everybody's... Not everybody, I guess the Patreon subscribers' favorite segment where we guess the new Patreon subscribers' ethnicity based on their last name. By last name, I mean last name. Sorry, I'm eating. Can't even speak. You know, unfortunately, we are doing this without Mike because I forgot to do it with him today. And honestly, it's hard to plan things in quarantine. He's probably out getting drunk right now. I'm editing, so I just thought I would do it alone. So listen, if you're one of these 8 people and you're just like, this is not what I paid for. I paid for both Fumi and Mike. You can just go ahead and DM him and just be like, hey, I'm a Patreon subscriber and you didn't guess my ethnicity, so please do it for me right now. You have the right. You know, you gave $3 and that's what you can demand now. So please go do that if you have an issue with it. But I hope that you don't. I hope that I'm good enough. But if not, totally DM him and that is your right. So let's get down to it. First, we got Kyoko Yamamura. That is the most Japanese name I've heard in my entire life. I'm not even sure that... I don't know if she's Japanese-American. Judging from her picture, she has a nice smile. So I'm going to assume she's Japanese-American. Next, we got Miriam Alvarez Rosenblum. Okay, this is... it's a hyphenated thing. I guess... I think Alvarez, maybe Filipino, but then... Mom is Filipino, dad is Jewish. I think Rosenblum is Jewish, and so they fused and created Miriam. Congratulations, you are a mixed person. Next, we got Michelle Lee, L-Y. I think, if I've learned anything from Mike, I think L-Y is a Vietnamese last name, so I'm gonna go ahead and say Vietnamese. Then we got Sakura Iwagami. That is Japanese as well. I think it means God of Rock. Honestly, that's a pretty sweet-ass last name. Thank you for donating. Then we got Wells Chen. That's Chinese. Sandy Hyun, H-U-Y-N-H. I actually think this is like a Korean middle name or like a first name. Maybe she is... I don't know if this is a last name. I think it's a middle name, but I think it's Korean. So boom. Then we got... Okay, this one is fucking long. This guy's name is Shotaro, but he spelled it like S-H-A-W-T-A-R-O-H. That's interesting. That's like how... a rapper would spell it. So that's kind of cool. You are a rapper Japanese person, Shotaro Granzier Nakajima. That is Japanese. A lot of Japanese people today. Honestly, shout out to my Japanese fans out there. I don't have enough Japanese people in my life, so this is all I have. Thank you so much. Even if it's $2 a month, I really appreciate it. Then lastly, we have Kristen Momoko Schaefer. Shout out to Kristen. I think we hung out once. Thank you for donating. I know you are also an artist, so this money means so much. You are Japanese. You are mixed. I think Schaefer is German or something. So she's mixed. A lot of mixed people, and that is totally legal, guys. So again, thank you so much for donating. We love you. Please stop. No, please don't stop. Please don't stop donating, is what I meant to say. And yeah, we got more bonus stuff coming out next month. So we'll see you then. And until then, please take care of yourselves. Bye.